Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers, he is calling me Dude!
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, welcome to Dudes on Hockey. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
In honor of Kyle Wellwood, we just ate a frozen custard.
Yeah.
I imagine that's what he's doing right now, just lounging around eating. All that great physical condition he got himself in. Do you think he's just undoing it all since the phone's not ringing?
Yeah. It's just, it's all pizza and beer at this point.
Hello, Domino's. Will you call me? Because no one else will.
How many pizzas can you fit into a car?
So get over here, stat. Don't forget the breadsticks.
Yeah, not a whole lot of news this week, dude, but we got some emails that listeners come through as they often do this time of year.
How was your trip, dude?
It was good. I went to New York, and of course, I went to the NHL store.
And what's it like? Because it seems like it's all different now.
Yeah, it's funny. The studio is still there where they used to do NHL Live. It doesn't look like they're ripping it down or anything, but I know you've been telling me that they're not doing that show in the same studio as
Be in that studio, but it's totally configured differently. It's really strange.
It looked the same to me when I was there, so Okay. Maybe they're just filming it someplace else, but it was still there. I bought an NHL t-shirt, just an NHL t-shirt. It was pretty funny. They had two Sharks set of Gucci jerseys there, and I asked the guy if they were like 80% off or more, and he said no. Oh. I said, okay. I guess people might want to come in there and buy a set of Gucci Sharks jersey now.
Nostalgia.
I suppose. Needless to say, there was a lot of Bruins gear because they won the cup.
Of course.
A whole Bruins display.
Of course.
And, you know, the standard NHL fare does my heart good to go into a store that's totally dedicated to hockey.
Highlight of the trip?
I saw some good entertainment when I was in New York. So I saw the Book of Mormon musical, which
awesome.
Was really hilariously funny, written by the South Park guys. So if you've seen the South Park movie, it's basically like that. It's that dirty. It's that funny.
Low light of the trip.
Let's see. The fact that it was 90 degrees and 90% humidity every day or close to it. That is tough.
That's it.
I'm glad I live on the West Coast. Let's put it that way, because man, that weather, you can handle it for 3 or 4 days. I can't imagine handling that for a couple of months or 3 months in a row. That would be so miserable. And so you go outside, you're like instantly sweating.
Yeah.
It doesn't evaporate because it's so humid. Going into the subways, it's even hotter than that, much hotter.
I always thought they should have the Biggest Loser outside.
Yeah.
In New York. Just go, all right.
Just
walk around.
Right. Just walk from here to 23rd Street. And you're good.
Don't eat a pizza in the process.
Right. Hello. Although I did have Ray's pizza. Ray's pizza.
Delicious. Well, we're glad you're back. We have so much to talk about.
Yep.
I've been itching to speak to you about the signing of Ben Gitte.
I think it's Gitte.
Dude, it's not going to matter.
No.
They're going to be saying it in Worcester, not here.
No, that's
right?
True. That's true. I remember Ben Gitte when it was funny because I don't keep track of every NHL player's career. And I certainly remember him playing for the Avalanche. Once upon a time. And so when I heard that Ben Gitte had been signed by the Sharks, it was a real blast in the past. Wow, that guy's still playing hockey? You know, yeah. I haven't heard his name in NHL circles in years, and it appears like that's not going to change.
Yeah, I mean, he's in his early 30s, I think, mm-hmm. Or mid-30s, okay. And he's played six seasons of minor league hockey before even getting a shot in the NHL. He was in the Boston Bruins organization. Then he went to Colorado, played for a couple of years there,
right.
Three seasons regular shift for them. And then he left. He signed with Nashville, played like six games there.
Oh.
Went to their AAA franchise,
right.
Shall we say. And then he signed with Columbus and didn't play a minute for the Blue Jackets last year. He was the captain of their AHL team. So I would imagine this is more of a depth signing. I don't think this is a guy we're going to see every night, dude, right?
I wouldn't think we're going to see him any night. I think Doug Wilson has made pretty clear that the guys who we saw in the Sharks unis last year for a few games here and there, guys like Machinter and Desjardins and McGinn, those are going to be the guys that are going to be filling that fourth line role, because that's really the only role Ben Gitte is really
right.
suited to fit at the moment, or really, you know, for the foreseeable future. So he's probably just going to be a veteran that they need to bring in. And he signed a two-way deal.
Yeah, he signed a two-way deal.
Right. So they don't have to pay him a whole lot of money if they put him in Worcester. So
right.
I would think that this would be one of those things where if four forwards get hurt, then we might see Ben Gitte.
Right.
That kind of thing.
Another player of maybe a more interesting player than Ben Gitte is a guy named Matt Pelich, I think is how you say his name. I wrote a blog post this week where he was kind of the focus of it. Former first-round pick of the Calgary Flames, battled a lot of injuries, including a life-threatening blood clot. He's the nephew of Vancouver GM Mike Gillis.
Interesting.
It's interesting. You know, so he's got not just any guy. You know, this guy's got a little bit of a story. And, you know, the Flames let him walk away. They did not tender him a contract at a restricted free agent. They let him walk. He's played mostly in the AHL, though he played four games, I think, for Calgary and had like 3 points. I mean, this is not a guy who's going to score points. He's a stay-at-home physical defenseman, has over 100 penalty minutes like in every season. And he hasn't even played a full season. And really, he's playing 50 games because he gets hurt so much. Is this interesting at all or not?
This sounds like a flyer, right? I mean, this is a guy that was once seemed to be pretty good and looked like to be pretty good, and it's a situation where you, again, maybe Worcester needs defensemen. This could be one of those situations where you bring him in and you need to fill the roster, and he might potentially have some upside if he can get his body to cooperate with what he wants to do, and who knows, he may be an outside long shot at you know, being the seventh guy or something like that. I could see that happening, maybe.
Yeah. It's a depth move, but it can't hurt to go, you know, dip your toe in the well of someone who has a decent profile to them.
Right.
And a guy who, you know, Calgary Flames bloggers last year was kind of looking back in their blog posts because I'm bored.
Right. I see. It's summer vacation
for
you.
Yeah, there you go. And they had some decent things to say about him. I mean, they seemed to project him as an NHL player who was really in the Robin Regier mode, but he was just buried behind guys like that, Saric and Adam Party out in, and Party's gone now, but in Calgary. But obviously, it's not good if a guy like Jay Feaster decides that you're not even worth keeping in the organization,
right?
Period. But there were some rumbles that he didn't want to stay either because he felt like he wasn't getting a fair shot. So, like there's a lot of opportunity here,
right?
But an interesting signing.
I mean, they have a lot of expensive defensemen. Well, Robin McGeer's gone now,
sure.
So, but maybe, you know, maybe not any. Maybe they might actually have some ability to make that roster now. But at one point, it seemed like they had, you know, eight defensemen that were all making $8 million over
right
there,
right? John McCarthy re-signed while you were gone. Restricted free agent.
Okay.
We've sort of shrugged our shoulders at John McCarthy a few times, going, couldn't really tell you what his strengths or weaknesses is.
Yeah, it's kind of hard
are.
To see.
Well, weaknesses only... are.
That's correct. You're not an English teacher, are you?
Strengths and weaknesses are.
Correct. So I think it'd be a lot easier to tell what his strengths and weaknesses are.
Thank you.
If he were in Worcester. And we could see him play a lot of minutes every night. When you see a guy play 5-6 minutes, you know, it's very limited situations where you see a guy play like that.
Yeah.
So a lot of times against the other team's fourth line, you don't see really him in any great offensive situations. So, yeah, I mean, John McCarthy doesn't wow you, but then again, he hasn't really been put in a position to wow you either. So the fact that the coaching staff thinks that he could have a shift occasionally in the NHL, I guess, is pretty good. And it seems like that's sort of what that offer is about. Okay, we'll keep you around again in case, you know, it looks like the fourth line is going to be the way the fourth line looks at the moment to the Sharks to me is you're going to have this sort of pool of guys, McGinn and Desjardins and Machinter and McCarthy and who knows who else, Ben Gitte, and it's sort of going to say, okay, these roles are for you guys to lose, and
right.
You know, we can go out and get somebody else, you know, a Ben Eager type player like the Sharks did when you can't carry the water. And it seems like that's what the Sharks did last year. Maybe they got a little bit more confidence in McGinn and some of those other guys, and they want to give him a legitimate chance to make the team filling that role. So
speaking of guys who play those roles, there is an unconfirmed report that former Columbus Blue Jacket fourth line player Andrew Murray has maybe signed a contract with the Sharks. I might have jumped the gun a little bit writing a post about adding Murray to the team, and it's not even a guarantee that he would be on the Sharks, since the report was that it was a two-way deal. That's been a few days now. There's been nothing on CapGeek, no official announcement by San Jose Sharks on their website. You know, if Andrew Murray is added to this team, I mean, he did like factor pretty heavily into the Blue Jackets' physical style of play under Ken Hitchcock when they made the playoffs a couple years ago.
Right.
He's like fourth on their team in hits. He seems to like throw the body around.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting or not?
For July. sort of the same situation.
Are we stretching for news here, dude?
You think? Could be.
We could go back and talk about custard.
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 Yeah, it's not super interesting. It's
another again, depth move.
Another depth fourth line move. So,
but it's not even a for sure thing. I mean, it right now, I'm not positive it happened. So
I know we talked about the when the Healy trade went down. Certainly, a lot of the focus was about the fact that the Sharks had gained cap room and all this kind of stuff. And certainly people hypothesized at the time that there might be another shoe to drop. Do you think now, or do you think the Sharks are in the same situation? Is there going to be another shoe to drop here? Or is this a move that I think I'm more in the camp of, which is the Sharks needed to gain some cap room, not only for this year, but for next year. And it was just one of those things. Or do you think the Sharks might go out and try to make another big move here?
I don't know if it's a big move, but I think there is definitely another move coming, but I'm not positive that this, I'm looking at it, $6.1 million in cap space. I'm not sure it's going to be used right now.
Mm-hmm.
They might not use it till February, and wait and see who becomes available. I don't think they're going to just let that cap space linger. He's probably got his eye on players who he likes that maybe have 1 year left on their deal who can temporarily take up that cap space.
Okay.
I've got a list of a few guys to talk about in a little bit, but I see you've got your eye on an email.
I got some emails. I'm just going to sort of break it up here with listener emails. It's questions@dudesonhockey.com. Dudes, I hope you are planning to make another Dudes on Hockey desktop background featuring the Sharks schedule. I thoroughly enjoyed having it on my computers last year. I actually opened it in my favorite professional level image enhancing software called Microsoft Paint and circled all the home games I would be attending.
Ooh.
I can't count the number of times it would cheer me up by reminding me my next Sharks game was only a few days away. So the answer is yes. Actually, we've gotten several queries about this. I think we got one or two on Twitter as well. The answer is yes. So my crack graphic designer, Bryce, is working on it. We've gone over some designs already. I certainly hope to have that fairly soon. I can't put a deadline on it, but it's going to be certainly before preseason begins. So it'll be well in time for the season. And yes, Blake, I used it at least as much as you did. It was on the desktop background of every computer I had. And it was just good to look at it and see when the next game was coming, what time it was going to be, and all that kind of stuff. And I know a lot of people use it, so you're going to get another Dudes on Hockey brand desktop background for 2011-2012.
Breaking news.
Breaking news, dude.
Dude, that sounds exciting. Another email?
Yes. Dudes, did you get the Sharks umbrella? It looks like the marketing department bought them from Al Davis and slapped on some cheap Sharks logos.
At least they did the spelling correct this time.
Yeah.
Who is side are you on? Those of you who have that t-shirt, you know what I'm talking about.
I was
at the teal and white game. Gosh, it's been a couple years now, but when they gave out the whose side are you on t-shirts, and it was who is side are you
who
on?
Apostrophe S. Oops. yeah, we got the Sharks umbrella. I like that it's huge. I think you could actually, a small U.S. state like Rhode Island, you could actually fit under the umbrella.
All the residents.
So it would be, it's good because I don't have an umbrella like that. So yeah, I'm happy I got it. It's good to get like random free stuff from the Sharks organization. It doesn't really seem to be any rhyme or reason. Like you get the pin every now and again. We just got the roster picture. So that's cool. There's Kyle Wellwood smiling away. Big grin. So it's just weird about Wellwood how that was in Pollock this week, right? That nobody...
Yeah, it wasn't in Pollock. It was on Andrew Strickland's, Andy Strickland, who I think covers the St. Louis Blues.
Okay.
Wrote that the word is that nobody, no team called Kyle Wildwood. His agent called a few teams and they said, we'll be in touch. But nobody picked up the phone and called him on July 1st.
How do we explain that?
Well, I think when you look at his performance on the ice, with the conference finals excluded, he was a very valuable member of the Sharks last, you know, third of the season.
Mm-hmm.
He played well.
Right. You know?
And then I think we both sort of gulped at his I'm just happy to be here quote before the conference finals. And maybe that made Doug Wilson groan a little bit. And he was a non-factor in that Vancouver series. It looks like we're looking to get a little more bigger and a little more physical on the third line. I really thought someone was going to go out and overpay, you know, to have him. It looked like maybe he had a little bit of a career resurgence, but clearly that's not the case, dude.
I have no idea what it is about this guy that people don't like. I thought he was really a pretty effective member of that line, and seems like the Sharks have gone a different direction in terms of their strategy.
Right.
They don't want to look for a smaller, skilled, good hands forward for the third line, which is what he was last year. The Sharks have decided to go a little grittier, a little bigger. But there's teams out there that don't want that kind of third line. So you would think those kinds of teams might like a guy like Kyle Wellwood.
I thought he might be a candidate to play on some team's second line. You know, mm-hmm. a team like, you tell me he can't play on Winnipeg's second line. I mean, talk about the biggest cheapskates on the block right now. I mean, yeah. Those guys aren't spending any money. You're so excited to have your team back, and then they're, you know, pinching pennies, you know, throwing, you know, little tiny bits of money around to sign Brett Feasterling or whatever it is they're doing. They're like, oh, yay. But the knock on Wellwood's been that he's not in the best of shape. And, you know, he certainly, for a guy who had a lot of promise, now he's on his, you know, third NHL team.
Right.
Looking for his fourth. Not good. There's maybe stuff we don't know, you know, about his makeup and his work habits, maybe, or maybe he's just a victim of circumstance. Interesting. We'll see what happens, dude. We'll see what happens.
All right, here's another thought from Justin. Hey, dudes, I was wondering what you would think if the Sharks got JP Dumont. After outstanding seasons between 06 and 09, best year was 72 points. His point production dropped to a 10-year low of only 19 points in 70 games last year. I'm not sure if he can PK or not, but he plays right wing, can easily be placed on the third or fourth line to add veteran presence to the bottom six. 33 years old, he should have a good year or two left before he bottoms out. Can be placed in the top six if someone gets injured. I bet he can be had for fairly cheap, and I think it's a risk we can afford to take. He's a decent playoff performer, 34 points in 51 games, never won a cup. Thoughts about JP Dumont, dude?
Well, I'm looking at his bio here on the Hockey News. It's always a good source for some of these brief player bios. And it says, isn't always the consistent worker for 60 minutes. So I thought we already got rid of Danny Heatley.
Oh, I'm not really sure.
we need someone like that roaming around the fourth line. Gosh, if he can't play, I know he was making some cash in Nashville, right?
Right.
But if he's fallen that far out of grace with a team that needs forwards like desperately,
right?
Like desperately, they need forwards, and they disliked him so much that they let him go.
He played. I picked a game in the playoffs. He played three games in the Ducks series. And only three games. So he didn't play every game in the Ducks series. And he played 8 minutes in that game. And I took a game at random in February, and he played 7 minutes in that game. So this guy's getting fourth line minutes. Justin, I'm with you. I don't necessarily think that would be like the worst signing in the history of man. But the fact is, his point production has dropped off so precipitously in the last few years. It went to like... went from 72, like you said, and then it was like 65 next year, which is pretty good. And then I think it went to like 45.
That's right.
And then it went to 19. Yeah, I mean, that is just falling off the table bad. I mean, that's like, you know, Jonathan Chichu crazy.
Yeah, he was a big part of their success, you know, for the few years when I don't think he was on their maybe 1 year that we played them in the playoffs, he was part of that team. But
right.
He had a pretty good run going. He was a pretty effective player for Buffalo for a couple years. But he seems to have lost his mojo.
Is this the young and fast kind of player it seems like the Sharks would want for the top six? Or is he the big and strong kind of player the Sharks seem to be going for the bottom six? I don't think he's either one of those.
No, I don't think it's a great fit. I would vote negatory.
2 years ago, you give me the option to get J.P. Dumont for a very reasonable price. I might have taken it. But after 70 games and 19 points... That's bad. That's bad times.
It's not even the points that bother me. It's just not the type of player that I think I'm hoping Doug Wilson's looking for that third line. I'm still hoping they can find the Sharks' answer to a Brad Marchand, Rafi Torres type of guy, someone who's got a little bit of a tool.
Mm-hmm.
To their tools, you know what I mean?
Right.
That's why I wrote a blog post this last week as an option of Chris Neal, and it was very negatively received, which I always enjoy.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I'm always right. I just thought as a guy who has been linked to the Sharks in the past, it's possible Chris Neal might be a fit. It was pointed out by a few readers that he has not had good years in the last 2 years. He's been taking some really bad penalties, not been real effective, doesn't have the best hands.
I thought we got rid of Ben Eager.
Give yourself a little rib shot.
Thank you.
I always have thought of Chris Neal as being a step above Ben Eager in terms of quality of player, but maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I was also surprised. I thought he was bigger than he is. He's really not.
He's not super tall.
No.
He's thick, though.
Yeah. I thought that he was taller than that. So, but that's the type of guy that I'm hoping the Sharks might target. A physical player.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, I mean, Talbot is nothing like Neal in their makeup, except for the fact that he also dishes out a ton of hits for a guy who's not that big. So I'm looking for someone who's going to throw the body around. Is that Jamie McGinn?
Maybe.
Can he do it without getting a 5-minute major?
Maybe.
But we also haven't seen Todd McClellan be willing to give Jamie McGinn that kind of ownership on a role of someone. I'm looking here for a 12-minute-a-night guy.
Right.
You know, Neal plays on even strength situations. He doesn't play. Same with Rafi Torres. So Rafi Torres didn't kill any penalties. I mean, this is a guy who's waiting for even strength, and he drives you completely mental when you're out there.
Right.
Can you think of any other players that maybe might fit into that description that might be available?
Might be available. That's the tricky part, right?
Right.
I can't think of anybody off the top of my head that might be available that really is a great fit for what the Sharks need.
Yeah,
right,
there's
now
guys out there you'd love to have, like, you know, a Cal Clutterbuck, but that's not possible.
Right.
Brad Marchand, they're not letting him go anywhere.
Okay, so Andy Bench, who writes for Bleacher Report, he writes Shark stuff for the Bleacher Report. He just messaged me on Facebook a couple days ago, just completely out of the blue, and he says, "Hey, would you trade Demers for Clutterbuck?" I'm not going to tell you what my response was, but I want to get your response. I mean, I want all the listeners to think about that right now. Cal Clutterbuck for Jason Demers.
Yes.
You think? You would do it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I wouldn't do it.
Why?
Young D, Clutterbuck has a lot of hits. And that's it.
Oh, a Clutterbuck, I think. Well, no,
I didn't see. I wasn't
to put up the numbers. Here we go. Cal Clutterbuck. It's the race. The race is on to see you can pull it up. Mike Scott. Ah, no. Come on, dude.
I'm always quick. I'm sorry. So 34 points last year, minus 5, 79 penalty minutes, about 800,000 hits.
Yeah. I mean, the guy, I think he kills penalties. He's had 3 good years. 80 penalty minutes last year. He's up to almost 20 goals now. I don't know. That's
for Demers? I don't know if
I like Jason Demers. We've also got Justin Braun. You're looking at a little bit of a duplicate part there, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know if Braun offers that kind of grit that we've seen from Demers.
Right. I feel like...
Okay. All right.
Okay. So let me say why I said no. Because I think Demers still has the ability to improve, and I like I think he can become a better defenseman. He can be a top four guy. And I think defense is hard to come by these days.
Sure.
Cal Clutterbuck has a number that everybody loves. They always talk about. What do you think of Cal Clutterbuck? You think of hits. The guy just hits everything that moves, which is great in a way, but we've also seen times where hits can sort of take away. It takes you out of the play when you go and try and lay the lumber on somebody. So if you told me I could get a 34-point flyer that's minus five for Jason Demers, I don't know how excited I would be.
Right.
The fact that it's Cal Clutterbuck and everybody hears about that, that he throws out 800,000 hits a year.
That's a great name to have on a jersey, too.
Plus, it's a great name
to have
on a jersey.
Don't you want a Clutterbuck jersey, dude?
It's pretty cool. I'm not saying I don't like...
I totally think you have a good argument. I just think you're wrong.
Okay. Wow.
Let me ask you this, dude. Okay. All right, and we're talking about, you know, options for the Sharks, you know, with this extra cash that they've accumulated mm-hmm. through the Heatley trade. We saw last year a little bit of restricted free agent gameplay by Wilson. Now, we know we've established that he cannot make an offer sheet because he does not own his own, you know, first or second round pick for next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that is out. You know, you can't make an offer sheet. But what he could do is be laying in the weeds to poach someone's restricted free agent who, when they go to arbitration... and the team declines to, you know, give them the reward that's the award that's given to them.
Mm-hmm.
This is what happened with Antti Niemi.
That's right.
Chicago walked away. Niemi was a free agent. The Sharks signed him
for less than the arbitration award,
right?
Which is wacky, albeit out of the ordinary. That usually doesn't happen.
So there's an interesting situation going on in New York. All right.
Okay.
New York Rangers coming into this week have three of their most valuable forwards going to arbitration. They have Brian Boyle, who did sign a three-year deal yesterday. But then they've got Ryan Callahan and Brandon Dubinsky, both, you know, headed to arbitration next week. And that could be a horrible situation for them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Brian Boyle is a player I like a lot. I mean, he's huge. He had 20-plus goals, kills penalties. He's like 6'7", isn't
he? Yeah, he's a beast.
He's gigantic.
Yep.
He would have been a great guy to get. But in a logical world, dude, it makes no sense for the Rangers to want to not have Dubinsky and Callahan on their roster. But they also appear to be missing a defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm asking you, would you trade Demers for Brandon Dubinsky?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I like Brandon Dubinsky a lot better than I like Cal Clutterbuck, that's for sure.
Would you trade Demers for the rights to Dubinsky if he is not under contract and you would still potentially maybe have to go to arbitration with him?
No. No. I think we...
So we saw that happen this week with Edmonton and Anaheim mm-hmm. when they traded for the restricted rights to Andrew Cogliano. And he's still headed to arbitration.
Right. And I know we talked about this off the air, is that the arbitration situation seems to be a fairly destructive one, because the situation is it's almost like you have a judge, the team comes in, or the player comes in and says, this is why I'm awesome and you should pay me $8 million a year. And the team comes in and says, this is why you suck.
Right.
And then the arbitrator finds a place in the middle and awards money. And a lot of times, I think understandably, the player says, man, the team really thinks I suck.
Should we have someone come in and do an arbitration of us?
Yeah, that would be funny. We just have to find an arbitrator. Actually, I'm sure there's no shortage of those out on the internet.
Some random person who feels like they can pass judgment. I think we have several arbitrators who comment on the blog.
I think we have two arbitrators in the room at the moment.
I love passing judgment.
It is a blog.
So... dude, this is a huge long shot, I think.
Yeah.
Because the Rangers would be insane to not
get
lock
both
up
of those
these
guys.
Both these guys. But they also are missing, you know, without Brian McCabe, they let him go. Unless they're gonna give the keys back to Wade Redden. Enjoy. You know, they're missing a defenseman uh-huh. right now. I mean, they might just go out and sign a Shane Knighty
right.
stopgap, but possible that if they don't make progress.
Wasn't there a guy in Winnipeg in the same situation?
Yeah, Blake Wheeler is in the same situation.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering if Doug Wilson might be, you know, laying in wait here before he makes his next move to see if, you know, say they're not known for being the most competent guy.
Right.
Maybe he's going to bungle this.
Maybe
he will bungle this, and one of these two guys will hit the market. Because you've got to think Dubinsky and Callahan are going there, sitting there going, well, if Billy Leno can get $4.5 million,
right,
what can I get?
That's right.
Because those guys are both better than Billy Leno.
Sure. Oh, yeah. I would take both of them over Billy Leno.
So, I don't know. I would think that that could be a very...
interesting situation.
Interesting situation.
Right.
If one of those guys were to hit the market.
Right.
So, just a thought, dude. Just a thought.
Dude, this dovetails into our last two discussions talking about GMs that aren't that competent and also about being wrong. So, this is D. Scott.
Okay.
Ooh,
D. Scott.
Interested in your opinion after 8 years of Doug Wilson. So, this is kind of a long email, but this could be interesting. Two chances to select Brent Burns at the 2003 entry draft, but chose Milan Mihalik and Steve Bernier instead. Traded Pricing and Josh Hennessy to Chicago in order to get Mark Bell, essentially. That's the famous trade where Martin Havlat went to Minnesota, which is so interesting now because Havlat's back on with the Sharks. Obviously, Mark Bell hasn't had a great career since then.
What do you mean?
In acquiring Danny Heatley from Ottawa, trading Christian Ehrhoff to Vancouver for Pat White and Daniel Rahimi to get cap space to add Heatley, and subsequently disposing of Heatley to Minnesota 2 years later. So he has this list of guys that the Sharks have given up. Mihalik, Chichu, Ehrhoff, Seto, Coyle, and Zach Phillips, who was the first round pick that Minnesota got this year. San Jose has Joe Thornton. Boston used the money to pay Joe Thornton to sign Chara as a UFA and converted Stewart, Primo, and Sturm into Brad Ferentz and Thomas Cabrera and a Stanley Cup. Tampa Bay converts assets Carl and Wishart received in the Dan Boyle trade into Steve Downey and Dwayne Rollison, and like San Jose, reached the conference finals. San Jose no longer has Brian Campbell, Bill Guerin, or Craig Revey. Buffalo has Tyler Ennis. St. Louis has David Perron, and Montreal has Max Pacioretty. If you head south on the I-5, Dean Lombardi has put together a formidable-looking team heading into the 2011-12 season. So, doesn't look like D. Scott's exactly a Doug Wilson fan. It's an interesting perspective, and the thing is that, of course, all of these things that you said are 100% factual, of course. But the thing is that there's a lot of sort of missing information here. You know, there's a lot of information that can be filled in around all of these situations that I certainly take issue with here. For one, yeah, we got Mihalik and Bernier, but a lot of people passed on Brent Burns, including the Rangers, who drafted Hugh Jessamyn, who never even played in the NHL.
Well, I'm a huge Hugh Jessamyn fan. I love him in Wolverine.
And not to mention everybody passed on Shea Weber, who was drafted in the second round that year.
Right.
So every GM was an idiot that year because they could have gotten Shea Weber and nobody did until Nashville did. So, you know, those kinds of arguments I'm not usually very persuaded by, because you could take almost literally every draft year and you could make a case for every GM in the league being an idiot, because it's really hard to find good players that are going to be awesome NHL players out of the top 10 or 15, okay? And sure, Bernier didn't work out. He had an okay NHL career, but if Mihalik wasn't hurt last year, he would have had 5 straight years of 20 goals. Now, I'm not the biggest Milan Mihalik fan. I wasn't when he was on the Sharks, but 5 straight years of 20 goals, that's a pretty decent NHL career, okay? Say what you want about Milan Mihalik. Would you rather have Brent Burns at the moment? Yeah, you would, but I'd rather have Shea Weber over both of those guys, and look how dumb everybody was. So, I mean, that's just sort of one piece of all this stuff. And also, Thomas Cabrera, the Bruins had to give up their number one pick and a great prospect to get Thomas Cabrera, so it's not like, because they traded Joe Thornton, they got Thomas Cabrera. So there's sort of a lot of situations like that that I definitely take into your, I definitely take into account in this email. And it seems like the Sharks are built to win now. We've talked about this, you know, in prior podcasts that, you know, the Sharks are making moves in order to construct a team that's winning now. And with regards to Dean Lombardi, Kings haven't done anything yet. And if you look at the number of draft picks that have made the NHL since 2006, when Dean Lombardi was here, you know, they had the number 4 overall pick in 2007, and they got Thomas Hickey. Thomas Hickey hasn't played a single game in the NHL.
Right.
You know, they have four other draft picks of that year that have played in the NHL, but not Thomas Hickey. So I'm sure that if the Sharks had a number four overall draft pick and he didn't play in the NHL, this might have made D. Scott's email. but the fact that that Dean Lombardi has put together a good team, I think maybe largely in part to the fact that the Kings were the beneficiaries of an extremely favorable trade for Mike Richards, in my opinion. I don't understand why Philly made that trade. But you look at the number of NHL players that have made the team since 2006 when Dean Lombardi took the reins. They have eight players that have made the NHL, and San Jose has seven. So not to mention the fact that they had the number two overall in 2008, and in 2009 they had the number five overall. The Sharks haven't had any picks close to that. The best they had was the number nine for Couture, and they had to trade to get it.
Yeah, my thing with this discussion is that you're talking about LA. They were terrible for two of those seasons in order to get those picks, right?
Right, yeah.
Tampa Bay was awful
for several years. The reason
they won the cup and then they went in the toilet.
The reason why they made it to the conference finals is probably because of a guy named Steven Stamkos, who was number one.
And Hedman.
Number one and number two overall.
So you've got teams that were good and then they were bad. Pittsburgh won two cups. They made the playoffs for 13 straight years, and then they had to rebuild. And then they get Crosby, and then they get Malkin, and then they get Staal. Right?
And they get Fleury.
But they were really bad.
Terrible. I mean,
they were so bad for a couple years.
4 years.
And they figured it out. You know, Boston missed the playoffs. They blow up their team by trading Joe Thornton. They missed the playoffs. And now they made their way back. Chicago.
Let's not forget,
they were ranked as the worst franchise, I think, in sports.
Right.
In like 2004. And then look what they did.
They got the number one overall pick in Kane, number three overall pick in Jonathan Toews.
I think the good news in this situation is that the Sharks have been good for the last several years, and Doug Wilson has to get a lot of credit for that. And I think he also understands that the window of opportunity to win is now. We see that in the moves that he's making. Is he mortgaging the future? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the window of opportunity is open, but it is closing slightly every year. And this year, it might be, you know, as open as it's ever been,
right?
You know, with the moves that he's made, and he's really redistributed the talent on this team, and we're going to see how it plays out. But in 2 years, dude, we might be looking at a teardown,
right?
And it's going to hurt. But that's how these teams got all these assets that D. Scott is listing here, is by doing a teardown, by doing a sell-off,
right?
You know, in 2 years, could we get, you know, two first round picks if we're trading Jumbo and Marlowe?
Yeah.
And they waive their no moves. So we could be looking at a team that then sucks, but then the Sharks might have three first round picks. I mean, we don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
If those guys continue to play at the rate that they are. So even if they win a cup, mm-hmm. it's going to happen.
Yeah.
You know, just because they're getting old.
There's these ebbs and flows, and it's not that hard to suck. So, I mean, if you want to do something that's really pretty easy, you take the team, you trade away all the talent, you get a bunch of first round players, and you suck ass, and then you go and get one of the top five picks, and then you can get a guy to build a franchise around. The Sharks haven't been able to do that.
It's hard to...
They haven't done it since 1997 when they got Patrick Marleau as the number two.
Right, right.
So...
But they haven't had that pick. I mean, you look at the high picks that they've had. Mm-hmm. I mean, with Couture, they traded up to get him, right?
Mm-hmm.
He was picked ninth.
I think it said it was the eight, I think.
Yeah, I mean, so
that's the best that we've got.
So, no, Couture is the best pick, right?
Mm-hmm.
Of a high pick, because Mahalik, I think, was ninth, drafted ninth. Maybe.
I think that's right.
I look back, you know, I'm figuring, you know, how long does it take to rebuild a team? 5-6 years? You look at the teams that were at the top. The best by far in the last decade, maybe last two decades, is Detroit.
Right.
You know, I mean, Detroit has maintained their level of excellence for years and years and years. You look at the second best team in 2005, 2006, Ottawa, they suck now.
Right. They're terrible.
They had their run. Mm-hmm. They had their run. You hope the Sharks don't turn out to be Ottawa, where they were a good team for several years but couldn't quite get it done.
Right.
Dallas.
Yep.
They're doing great. Carolina.
Yeah.
You know, no. Calgary, New Jersey. I mean, these teams, they had their moment.
They all missed the playoffs.
They had their, and they all missed the playoffs. And they all, I mean, now look at New Jersey now. They've got Larson.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes in cycles, right, dude? And we're riding the end of this upward cycle.
Right. And the question is Doug Wilson going to be able to turn this into a Detroit-like thing and continue this pattern of being a good team?
Right. Well, that's what we're going to see in the development of some of these younger players this year.
Right.
Because we don't have that high-end prospect anymore that Charlie Coyle's gone.
Right.
We're going to have to, is Marek Videnski going to be able to be a useful second line, third line player? What's going to happen to Freddie Hamilton? Now, we'll go more in depth to the Sharks prospects, I think, in the coming weeks, but the cupboard is not empty, but
it's thin.
Old Mother Hubbard doesn't have much in there.
You said like hockey's future rated all the teams.
Sharks were last.
Last.
That was Puck Prospectus. They're
last,
last
in prospects.
Yeah, last. That's not good.
Right. So we'll have to think of a way.
On the other hand, you know, you look at, okay, well, the Sharks' best prospects are playing with the team, or you've turned them into other assets. Mm-hmm. If the Sharks win the Cup, no one is going to care mm-hmm. that the Sharks are last in,
right.
in prospects. Who cares? We don't even think about that.
Right.
We'll be wearing our Stanley Cup t-shirt
yep.
gear for the next 10 years, and we'll enjoy it as they rebuild.
Right.
But, I mean, unfortunately, that's the reality of the situation.
That seems to be the cycle that teams are going through in order to become one of those great teams. You have to be, it seems like right now, you have to be terrible. In the case of Chicago, in the case of Pittsburgh, in the case of Tampa, you have to be terrible not for 1 year, because Philly was terrible for 1 year, and they ended up with James Van Riemsdyk, JVR, who is now going to be a top-line forward for them next year, probably. And Claude Giroux, also a number one draft pick. You're going to have to be terrible for several years. That's been sort of the mold. You have to be bad for 3 years. Pittsburgh's case, 4 years.
Right.
In order to get these kinds of high draft picks that are going to be guaranteed NHL players.
Yeah. Philly is that team right now that is a weird mix of like future and present. Mm-hmm. You look at their blue line, it's all about now.
Right.
You look at their forwards,
it's all about 2 years from now.
The jury's out. You know, are JVR, Giroux, and Shen really ready to carry the load, you know, for this team? You know, we're going to find out. I mean, they may have done their tear down
mm-hmm.
a little bit too soon while also adding really expensive parts in other places. I'm still a bit bewildered by the Flyers summer, but
yeah. I mean, we went over like a couple weeks ago, but basically they just lost confidence in the sort of the leadership structure of the team. I think Pronger got him out, basically. Or Pronger made an argument that management took to heart and said, yeah, these, you know, Richards and Carter aren't the guys we want to be at the helm for the next 5 to 10 years, so we got to get rid of them. And they took a beating, at least in the Kings trade, in my opinion, to get them. So there it is,
dude.
All right, dude, I think we're going to wrap it up for this week, but as always, we managed to...
Oh, hello?
Mark Purdy, is that you?
He had to go.
Oh, he had to... Hello? Hello?
What happened?
I think I just hit a button. Anyway, dude, I think we've talked plenty long enough for this week in the off season. Thanks for waiting until this late date in the week to get the podcast, and hopefully we'll be back on a more regular schedule next week.
Yeah, the Sharks prospect camp was this week. No one was allowed to take a peek.
Right.
It was shrouded in mystery. But maybe we'll take a dip into the Sharks prospects next week and come up with our rankings of who we've got and what we've got to look forward to.
Right.
And depress ourselves in that way.
All right. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Think the show sucks? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.